can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat children.
All right, we back. Motherfucker Tough Talk Podcast. Here with my co-host, Ibrahim Khalif. Say what up.
What up, y'all?
We got a special guest. We got Dominic Leonelli.
Yo, what's up, everybody? How y'all doing?
Very funny guest from Ohio.
Yep.
Okay. What part of Ohio are you from?
Northeastern, a little town outside of Akron called Youngstown.
Youngstown, okay.
Black Keys.
Is that right?
The Black Keys is from Youngstown.
Black Keys,
oh,
yeah,
that's
from
cool.
Youngstown.
Good to know. I didn't know that.
Yeah. You didn't?
No. There's a song I know somebody always talks about the mill or something. Bruce Springsteen. I don't know.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah,
yeah,
a song called Youngstown.
I'm, not, I'm from Jersey, and I'm not even a Springsteen motherfucking. A lot of Jersey niggas is Springsteen.
Gotta have ripped jeans and shit.
Yeah.
Gotta rep your people, man.
Yeah.
Springsteen. Rip you don't get a lot of people from Jersey. I'm from Indiana, so we gotta know Michael Jackson. That's like the last motherfucker. Mike Epps. That's pretty much it, man. It
ain't shit there.
So you're a fellow Midwesterner. Did you start comedy in Ohio?
Yeah, I started at the first real comedy club was the Funny Stop in Akron, Ohio. Yeah.
Funny Stop. Okay, dope. What year did you start there?
Man, you know, I don't even know the exact year. I want to say, truthfully, it was 2000 and... I know I was 23. I'm pretty sure I was 23. I didn't keep an exact start date.
Got you. You just kind of went and did it, probably on a bet.
Yeah, I had a guy I worked at a car wash, and this dude was working there, and he told me, he said, "Hey, man, you do stand-up. That's a stand-up joke. I do stand-up, too." And I was like, dude, I was just lying. I was like, yeah, I do stand-up. I do it there. Yeah, I didn't know what stand-up was in Ohio. We didn't really have clubs like that. Mm-hmm. I called one club when I was 18. The guy was like, "Oh, you got to be famous and a comedian and stuff." So I let it go.
That is always interesting because you're like, you feel like you're funny. And then it's just like, well, how the fuck do I start? And then once you realize how you start, you're like, oh, I just start. That's how you start.
Yeah.
So literally day one, you are a comedian. Same as everybody else that does comedy, which is weird. I feel like we need some type of licensing.
You need a criterion to hit.
Like if you need a license to be Spider-Man in Times Square, then you should need a fucking license to do comedy because it's so much bullshit going on that it's just like, Jesus Christ.
It is literally a free-for-all.
Yeah,
it's a free-for-all and people don't know what they're seeing. I think there should be maybe a pro-am label until...
Like a D-League?
Until you can pass. Like a D-League, like a development league, a minor league system, almost like how basketball is and baseball.
When I first started this shit, that's what I thought it was. I thought, you know, because everybody got to pay your dues shit. I thought it was like literally, hey, motherfucker see you grinding in the mic scene or whatever. Then eventually you move up.
I mean,
but it's almost like you
it
only...
It kind of is. What makes it bad is two things. One is the audience perspective because they don't know what they're walking into. Sometimes, you know, they're just in the village or wherever and someone's like, comedy show. Then they come in and it's not what they were expecting. They're expecting quality level. They don't realize how much what they see on TV.
How many of them motherfuckers is learning
they
on
don't
the
realize,
job?
Yes. They don't realize that it's on the job training and that's how you get good at it. And they also don't realize what they see on TV has been ran through so many filters and it's so worked out. It's so worked out that, you know, at that point it's perfect. Although some of the shit they put up now is not worked out at all. But that's another story for another time. But yeah, that, and then also the comedians sometimes don't know where it's just like, do you understand that you're not ready?
You're a
micer. So, yeah, you started in Ohio. Not really sure about what year. He's like Dikembe Mutombo used to be on the basketball cards. Like the Africans on their date of birth. On their day of DOB for most of the African players used to just be a question mark. Like, look, this motherfucker might be 37. He might be 38. We don't know.
He's like a soccer player from Bolivia.
We just know he had an Adam's apple, so he was ready. He was in the Adam's apple, so he was ready, yo. That's how it be, man. But is what it is.
So how was your first experience going on stage? When you like finally went on stage, how was that first experience?
It was actually really good, man. I went up and I had like four of my friends there. It was a light crowd, man. And you know what's funny? I had the tape somewhere and I watched the tape and I was at my girlfriend was at the table recording it. Mm-hmm. And first 5 minutes, all I got at the very end, I just got... That's all you
damn.
Get.
Damn. Yeah, you got a chuckle at the end?
What do you mean the first five?
Or how long five. Was the... Yeah, it took 5 minutes.
It's like the first five. Like, did they hear him 10?
Right.
Hey. I've heard some shit now.
Midwest, you could get off.
It was a mic or...
Yeah, it was a contest. New, Northeastern Ohio's search for funniest amateur comedian or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And yeah, I got five. I just got that at the end. And then I watched the tape. Hey. You hear me going up to the camera, and I'm like, "Oh damn, baby, I killed it!"
Hey, you got that chuckle, baby. Long as they didn't boo, sometimes.
Oh, I was hooked. Oh, I got that chuckle. Word I up. Was hooked.
You get a couple sometimes, of laughs as a rap, but
sometimes it's like your first time having sex. Like, it's like, yo, I got it in.
I tore that pussy up.
I got it in.
I
got it in. I stroked it once.
She enjoyed it.
She screamed.
Yeah. Yeah. 5 minutes.
Not realizing it's in disgust.
Hey, that's hard. Some of us don't make it that far our first time. I remember one time I tried to pull my shit out. I was mad young. But yeah, I pulled my shit out and that shit just went... I said, well, we'll try again next week. That's all, folks. It was like a TV show.
I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Yeah,
it
is awkward. You first go up, you just even little shit like taking the mic out the mic stand is like a 2 minute thing that you got to figure out.
Oh, you're choking all the way up near the, what you call
it?
Yeah. You're fucking with the mic cord.
Like, I can still tell an amateur as soon as, like, soon as they get to the stage, they're already talking before they had the mic out the mic stand. Then they don't move the mic stand behind them, and it's little shit like that that I'll be looking at like, yo, that joke hit about a 6 on a scale of 1 to 10. It would have been a 7 if you'd have just put the mic stand behind you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But because of that, everyone's staring at the mic stand in front of you. It's like weird shit, like beginner shit, like having the condom on. As soon as you take your pants off, the chick is like, whoa, don't you need to put it on? You like, baby, it's already on.
It's been on all day.
Hey.
It's been on during dinner.
Hey, I did that shit one time.
Yeah.
Hey, that used to be the hard part. When I was like 16, it's like trying to put it on was hard. That shit will throw your whole shit off. She's staring at you while you do it. Y'all trying to make sure ain't nobody coming. Shit was tough.
I don't know, man. I was always about setting the right opportunity.
Setting the mood.
Not
the
mood, the opportunity. Candles and shit.
Yeah, no, I ain't like no fucking candles.
Some Red Lobster biscuits.
Fuck you. I would go to that.
Shannon made biscuits. Hey.
Shut with them biscuits. You know what's up.
Man sets the mood like them biscuits.
I had an older chick. Yo, my first time, I had an older broad. Yeah. She was 21.
See.
I lied about my age. I was 16. I lied about my age,
pushing you,
man.
Into it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, that's how it works. Why that older friend?
No, it was just a motherfucker that was already, he played ball, and he was already getting pussy.
So
the thing
exactly
was, he's like, man, it was his mission. I'm going to get you some pussy this summer. So he lied to my girl. He's like, hey, can you know, come spend the night, blah, blah, blah. My grandmother was like, ah, yeah. I went over. We was over for a week. His sister was away. He had the whole apartment to itself.
Hey.
Bruh, these two chicks he knew from the, one chick he was already fucking with from a church.
Yeah.
And she brought her friend. And I had already talked to her on the phone. She said, how old are you? I'm like, I'm 18. She was like 20. Bro, I talked so much shit. Then we got down to it. And she's like, why are you? I was like, I'm a virgin.
You told her?
I'm a virgin.
You confessed?
Yeah. But it seemed like it turned her on more.
It turned her on more.
And then, yo.
Yeah.
I was like,
hey, see, you was lucky. See, yeah, I started off at staircases and shit.
Yeah, you was
in the park.
Yeah, I had my first in the park, too.
Yeah.
On the sliding board.
Sliding board.
Dude, I didn't know what I was doing. No, I was like 15. She was 15. My friend kind of.
I hope so. You said a sliding board.
How about But she didn't have a mom. She just had her dad. I don't think she knew how to take care of herself all like that. Like, not for nothing. But so I thought so they all smelled that bad. I was like, yo, like, even our friends were like, do you smell roadkill? Like, I know it sounds like an accident. Roadkill.
Damn.
We were like, oh my God. And dude, that shit scarred me for like a year and a half. That shit was, I couldn't wash that shit off my finger. Oh. I was wiping it in grass.
Oh, it was you're still in your shit.
Shit was just like rancid. But she had, she didn't have a mom. So you know her dad never told her.
She was wiping from back to front.
Oh no!
Yeah, I mean, she couldn't read either.
Not back to front.
She was wiping back to
she
front.
She was back to front.
Oh man!
She had some Toxic Crusader pussy.
Fucked up. I had no clue what I was doing.
First times are a motherfucker. So how long did it take you after that first time to get back on stage?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. I think I was right back home. Well, the club I was at made it so difficult. I ended up starting to do my own, but I would drive up there like 45 minutes, and the dude would just be like, and I don't know, you're like, hey, you're not getting up. You'd be the manager of 45 minutes.
See, yeah, a lot of y'all don't know if you're on the coast, if you in, well, in L.A. you know even, but in New York, I mean, you can take one train and do five shows. But fucking Midwest and everywhere else, you gotta drive. Like, I remember driving an hour to Chicago and trying to get there before the list is full.
Yeah.
Then people lying and signing up other people and all kind of shit. You like, yo, I just drove 2 hours from Indianapolis. So
engine overheating.
Yeah. Then I remember I started at Crackers in Indianapolis, Broad Ripple, and we was basically only getting up once every 2-3 months. Like, they had us on rotation, and then you couldn't say fuck, you couldn't curse.
Yeah. Mm.
And then, like, you get banned. I remember getting banned for 90 days. And you know how, like, at some point your reflexes kick in?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I used to try to just read my set verbatim because I knew if I started thinking about it, I would just start talking like me and say fuck. And I remember saying fuck, and right as I said it, fuck! And seeing the dude give me the light and all that shit. And yeah, you're banned for 90 days. It was like he couldn't wait.
You're like, motherfucker, I only get up once every 90 days anyway.
Exactly.
You mean to the point where my next rotation? Yeah. Okay.
So you're like, how am I supposed to get good at this shit if I'm only getting up? Now, granted, we started having like bowling alleys and little bars that people would do shows at. You know, the ambush shows where people are having their dinner and then we're yelling at them.
How's everybody feeling? It's like, the fuck is this?
Yo, how many of y'all in here on a date? And they're all looking
everybody.
Up like, everybody, motherfucker. You're the only one here ruining things. Asking us random questions. Is this part of a survey?
Man, dude, think about it. Sometimes when I think about it, it's like, would you really go through all that bullshit again?
Yeah, I do think about that myself. Like, yo, what?
But now that you know better, right?
It's like, I don't know.
But it kept your... But the thing is like... The way I look at stand-up, and like I said, to parallel stand-up, what I do is I watch a lot of fucking videos about like wrestling, pro wrestling shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And they talk about the business. And they talk about how you protect the business. Now, back in the day it was, before it got all this, they had a thing called kayfabe, where they would protect the business of wrestling. Mm. And it preserved the sanctity of the art form.
Right.
So it's like whoever wanted to get in, they kind of made it hard for you to get in. But then once you were in, you learned the ins and outs. You learned it was a work. You learned different things about it. So it made it probably hard back in the day when y'all started because they wanted to keep it from what it is now, where everyone feels as though they're a comedian.
Yes.
They got an Instagram. They got whatever. Right. They classify themselves as a comedian versus you drove those hour and a half, those 45 minutes or whatever, so you could be able to get up. You only got up once every 3 months to see if you really wanted it. And then once the motherfucker saw you, they was like, all right, they'll probably bring you in and whatever. You know what I mean? It's frustrating
but
at first.
But it
protects the business, though.
And then one of the other big things that is annoying with comedy is, well, one is just like you were saying, it's almost a secret society, like a fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's one degree of separation away. Like, I was watching the Kevin Hart documentary on Netflix. Did y'all check that out?
I didn't see that.
I binged the whole shit,
You could practically watch it on mute and just watch the places he's going, the arenas he's doing, and his homes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that plural with an S.
Yeah, word.
And that shit would inspire the fuck out of you. But as I'm watching it, like I said, it's important to remember we all one step away. It really is made men. Like, I'm sitting there looking at it, and I opened for Alonzo Bowden in D.C. like a month ago. He let me feature for him down in D.C. Where did we do? Arlington Draft House. Dope spot, by the way. Yeah, but as I'm sitting there watching it, he's on the TV, and I'm like, oh, shit. That's crazy. Like, literally everybody and everything is one step away.
Yeah.
You literally could make one phone call and then reach that person, even if you don't know. That's why, like, what you're saying, sometimes for the social media and different stuff, the Facebooks and all this shit, where you get these people who have these outlandish statements, and you're just like, yo, that person's one phone call away. So a lot of times it's kind of funny to sit back and watch on Facebook. You'll see somebody say something about somebody that someone else opened for. Mm-hmm. And then you literally sit back and wait for it. Okay, 9 a.m., 10 a.m., 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock. You see somebody pop into the comments. Yo, motherfucker, what's up with... Next thing you know, the post is gone. The phone call was made. I'm like, yeah, that's my people's.
Small world.
You don't have five fucking minutes.
Right.
So who the fuck are you talking about someone's hour or whatever? And I mean, I get that we all have those opinions, but I think the bigger point that you was hitting at was it's not just comedy. Mm-hmm. Think about back when everybody... people took photography classes. Mm. Everybody now has a fucking camera
that
on their phone. That does all the work for them. There really is no technique anymore. Every idiot with a camera is a fucking photographer.
Think they have an eye.
Every cute girl thinks she's a model.
Yeah.
It's like,
cute.
It's not even cute. It makes you feel like, yeah, not even cute. You're really right.
It cheapens the brand. It cheapens
everything's
the art form.
Been so cheapened.
So I think some women, I'd rather look at carpet. I'm like, oh, fuck. Fuck is this?
You start checking out the apartment around
them. Yeah.
That's some nice wood trimming there, right away though.
Well, yeah, we like to think it's just us, but yeah,
everything has kind of brought down in value. You know, a bit.
In some weird
way. They pull back the fucking curtain. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know, you could be a comedian too.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a chick I know, you know what I mean? She's doing mics and she's classified herself a comedian. Like, it took me a while to change anything to be like, yo, I'm a comic.
Yeah.
Right.
Even then, you know, it took a while because I believe that title should be earned.
But that's why we need licenses. It's people who ain't been on stage and. You know, 12 years talking about, yeah, I'm a comedian. And then it's like, granted, if you got to a certain level and then you quit, once a comedian, always a comedian. But were you even a comedian? That's why I said I think we need licenses. You need a license to be goddamn Spider-Man in Times Square.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
Because they were getting the tips, and then, you know, they would get angry about the tips and then chase after somebody.
Yeah.
Now you're at the police station like, yo, Spider-Man beat my ass. And they're like, which one?
Yeah.
So now they all got licenses.
They got register numbers.
You gotta do 5 minutes. You know what it should be? You know when you do driving school, you gotta log in your hours? It's like, nah, you gotta have a host sign that We need 100 hours before you can.
But even then, you know, these bringer show motherfuckers would be just taking money. Give me 200, I give you your license. Shit would be like car registration down there.
Give you a fake tag.
Ain't seen the insurance people.
Your expiration date would be all fucked up.
Like, yeah, license number 2061, call my wife a cunt.
We got 5 different 2061s. Which one now? It's a scam. Like,
right. Like, now you're like, wait, that wasn't me. I wasn't even there.
Yeah, I wasn't. You getting all these citations?
Yeah, it's all bad. But yeah, we need some type of system, man. And there is apprenticeship, and there is some sense of, like I said, made men, and it really is a small circle. But like I said, what's crazy is you really can't tell anyone they're not in the circle. But there are a lot of people who aren't in the circle at all, and it's just like, Jesus Christ, man. And just some of those unwanted opinions, I think, or unwarranted opinions get out there. What the fuck were we talking about?
You starting comedy.
when did you come to New York, man?
Ohio, I came out here on vacation. It's been 8 years, actually. You know, it's funny. This is the anniversary.
January 2nd.
It's been exactly 8 years I've been in New York.
Congratulations, man.
I came on vacation
dope.
And never went back.
I told myself,
man.
I made a plan. I said, if I get past it, one club. Actually, I met you then. I met you 8 years ago today.
That's
Phil.
Crazy. Hey, yeah. Hey.
You see my sad happy, audition. If you happy anniversary.
I don't remember your audition. Did I see it? Was I there?
Maybe. You guys were there, but I don't. Oh, no. You know what
it
happened?
Always feels like we were there because me and Dom met Comic Strip, right?
Yeah.
Comic Strip, late night auditions, which, yeah, if you don't know, Chris Rock used to stack chairs at Comic Strip. And they just kept it around as a tradition. That's where you go up after the 8 o'clock show. So you go up pretty well into the night to make sure your ass is funny.
Especially that.
And a lot of times the audience members are leaving. A few might stick around and check it out. So, like I said, it makes the level of difficulty for your audition that much fucking harder. It's hard to be funny at fucking 10:30 when everybody's already drunk.
And they've already seen a show.
And they've already seen a show. And they've already seen good pros, you know, so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so how did that go, man? You got here, you said 8 years ago to this day. Yeah. Damn, man, that's dope.
So the way it originally worked out was I came out here. I wasn't going to stay this long. I went to all these clubs. Nobody would even look at me or talk to me. Yo, this ain't the process. I go to the Strip, and it's D.F. Sweetler there, and I'm asking, how do you do it? He's like, oh, well, you know, you got, there's a process we got about the line and all this and that. So I was like, okay, cool. Saying, I ended up coming back the next day anyways, you know, just to come back to the club. It was my last day in town. And I'm just telling a joke, actually, and Richie, I didn't realize it was to Richie, the owner. And, like, Chuck Nice and Roberto Vanderpool.
Vanderpool, okay.
Yeah, very funny comics. So they kind of were laughing at what I was saying. They kind of talked to Richie with me, and Richie was laughing. They said, you know what, that's funny. I'm going to actually give you an audition. So he said, come back tomorrow. So it was snowed out. So he said, come back tomorrow. Then he was sick, so then I had to extend my trip. And then he's like, listen, I promise you'll get your audition. And it was Jimmy Fallon. You know him? Jimmy?
Yeah, he's, I remember funny. Him. Yeah, hell, Jimmy Fallon.
He went up and just, dude, I'm telling you, for 20 minutes.
Kicking ass.
Yo, and then they go, okay, we're going to do, we got an auditioner coming for late night. So I ended up doing actual late night set. But there wasn't many people there, man. I felt like I bombed. And Richie still passed me, and he pulled me outside. And he said, he was like, you can't write a joke to save your life. That's exactly what he said. And he was like, hang out with Nico, and he'll help you with writing some jokes, Nico and these guys. And he knocked on a picture of Eddie Murphy, and he's like, but you got something more importantly. And this is what he said, man. I don't know, I tell everybody.
Nah,
like,
it's
he
dope.
Was like, you got what's known as it. And he's like, I never wrong pick him, but... He's like, truthfully, like Adam Sandler, you know, this is what he said, man.
He's yeah, like, folks, he's speaking of Richie Tinkin, who owns the Comic Strip, was Eddie Murphy's first manager, also managed Adam Sandler. Nah, that's a dope story, bro. I'll tell you mine about the same as yours, coming from Indianapolis and literally did Gladys's room that has the room there at like 6 o'clock. Did that a few times, got a tape of that. Then I bugged JR, who was managing at the time. Didn't know that there was an actual audition process. I just had been reading that Chris Rock started there, so I wanted to go there. Bugged him 2 or 3 times in a row, and he just said, yo, basically, you're getting on my nerves, kid. Come back next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Came back next Tuesday, and the long line of people or whatever that it was to audition, I remember going out, like, I think I went up, like, third. And by then, it's only, like, 5 people left. Huh. It's a big Puerto Rican dude, and it's, like, 4 chicks just with him for whatever reason. And after the third person, I think, he was getting up out of his seat to leave. And I forget who was hosting, but the person goes, hey, man, this is these kids' dreams, like... This is their big night. This is their audition night, and you're about to leave on it. And he was like, you know, I gotta go. We've been here a while. You know, they've been there probably 2.5 hours. So he goes, all right, we'll stay for one more, but if the next one sucks, we leaving. And I went up and caught that motherfucker with the first joke, and he sat back down. And then I got passed, so.
Damn.
I've been performing there ever since. And yes, it's an honor to, you know, get past there. Like I said, you can read the book about the Strip. What is it called? The book about the Strip? I don't know. There's a book that is written by
Jeff
Jeffrey Gurian.
Yeah.
Oh.
about the comic strip. I forget what the name of it, but you'll read how Tony Rock, Chris Rock, Jim Gaffigan, all these people got passed, which to me, that's the problem I see with comedy is that the all shows are good. It's good to have a place to go to practice and to learn. But what you find now is a lot of the TV and a lot of the producers of TV shows are out there. And these people never come back to anybody to get past.
Yeah.
So there's no standard. Mm. The standard's been lowered. So now you'll see these people with wild credits and you'll be like,
man, shit.
But this doesn't sound like anything. Where are the punchlines? Whereas everybody used to have to go through, you know, Carson, or everybody used to have to go see Bob Sumner at Def Jam and meet that standard, that bar. So everybody was hitting at a certain level. But nah, that's dope that you got past there, man. And yeah, we met there, and me, you, Nico, Anthony DeVito, who else? It was mad people there. Yeah. Nick Callis. So many people.
Yeah, yeah. You know who I missed too, man? Who's the other dude who used to always...
Ruben.
Ruben, man. That motherfucker.
Ruben Garcia.
I miss Ruben,
if you're
man.
Listening, motherfucker, we miss you. The squad misses you. But yeah, we used to be in there jamming late at night.
1 in the morning. Sometimes people, that shit is crazy,
people
man.
Getting up and leaving and all kind of shit. But that shit builds bonds, man, that lasts to this day. But yeah, you've been here 8 years now, man. That time fucking flies, dog.
Yeah.
So, you know, who inspired you to want to do a comedy?
That's what's funny is two people, ironically. The person that signed me up for the open mic, who's still one of my favorite comedians ever, who's Jimmy Bartok. He's a road comic. He's like 30 years in the game. If you ever see where he's at, check him out. He's really cool to watch.
Back in Ohio.
Back in Ohio, yeah. And then, ironically, just a weird way he inspired me was hanging with Mr. Cooper. Did I ever tell you this story?
Nah.
So, Mark Curry. He came to our hometown. Like I said, we didn't have no comedy clubs, nothing. It was like a celebrity. This dude from the TV set is coming to our town. I used to watch Hanging with Mr. Cooper. That was my show. And then my parents got all dressed up. Everybody in the neighborhood was talking about Hanging with Mr. Cooper. And I stayed up all night. I heard my parents getting ready to leave. And then they went. I was a kid, like 6 or 7. And we had a babysitter come. And I just waited in bed to hear about the show. And my dad came back. And they were all laughing, talking about how good the show was. And all this crazy shit. Like, a dude actually overdosed in line right before the show on coke. And died. Crazy or what?
Damn.
And, like, some fight broke out because, like, what he used to do was he'd pull people's girls on stage and act like he was fucking them. Like,
Mark Curry?
Back in the day, yeah. So, like, some dude was, like, pissed about that. And I remember just hearing all about that. And they were like, yeah, and he just went up there and he was just talking to us and he was funny. And I remember thinking, like, man, that's kind of, like, what I do. I was, like, thinking, man, I could do that. And it was always in my mind since then.
Mm. Cool, yeah. Mr. Cooper, Mark Curry is a dope comedian. I've seen him. Last time I saw him, he was opening for Cat Williams at the Barclays. And I shouldn't say opening, more like featuring, because Cat'll throw, you know, 4 or 5 people up right before him. And it was dope. Like, it was actually right after the fight, after Cat got beat up by the middle schooler.
Oh, word.
So literally the next weekend, me and Nico went to Barclays and got to check out Cat Williams. And I mean, that motherfucker was talking all his shit. Cat actually did a one-on-one show just for New Yorkers, which, like, all he talked about was New York. He talked about the pizza, different blocks. Cat's a funny motherfucker, but
that was so similar about that was like similar to his Netflix special. He talked about Jacksonville for the whole
His thing. Yeah. His, you know, opening 20 minutes or whatever. I think some people try to take comedy too seriously, to where it's like, yo, just fucking have fun. Like, that's who Dom reminds me of. Dom has fun. Like, he's not all serious. He's all not like, let's talk about the war in Darfur. Whereas I feel like some New York comics are extra political when it does, when it's not called for.
Right.
You know, 10 minutes of fuck Trump. And it's just like, you ain't said nothing yet. We still waiting on you to say something. Like, Dom has that smooth, like, conversational kind of style.
Dom got flavor.
Almost like a, young Ron White or something. Yeah, and for the listeners, Dom is white, actually. Like, I mean, y'all probably hearing his voice, and y'all like, I can't figure out if this motherfucker...
He was talking about his girl when he's at LOL, right? And mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, this motherfucker got a black girlfriend. On some real shit. I'm just waiting for the reveal, like, because he be like, yeah, man, what's going on, babe? You know, like.
Dom, you Italian, right?
Yeah.
So he's the other white meat.
He's
Italian. So
Sicilian?
Picture a dude.
Right, and that makes sense then.
Picture a dude in a tracksuit. That's all of this shit is being said.
It's like him.
Yeah.
All the Sicilian guys.
Cool as fuck. You did a big gig actually recently. You opened for somebody at Caroline's. Did you open? You host or you featured?
I was featuring for Norm the whole week. And
for Norm McDonald.
Norm McDonald? Yeah. Dope, man.
Yeah, it was cool. I got to hang with him, talk to him. He asked me to open for him when he comes back to East Coast.
Yeah, you got to open for him at Caroline's, right?
Yeah, and it was the same weekend as New York's Funniest, so...
Oh, that's awesome. Mm. Oh, so it was part of New York's Funniest, then.
Yeah, it was also in the New York Comedy Festival, yeah.
Yeah, that's dope, man. That's big. How big was those crowds? It's packed?
Packed out, man. Love. When I say packed out, I mean they added seats. 320 plus every show.
Nice. Yeah. And then Norm's a dope comic, man.
Yeah, he is.
It's good as, like, we just had the analogy about having, like, a developmental league or something like that. It's like, you do a show like that, it's, you feel like you're called up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, the Yankees need a shortstop. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, all right, cool. You know what I mean?
But that's one of the reasons to move to the coast, because now you do see a lot of people pop off social media and they get the big agent, the big manager, and they never have to move out. Which two things. One is, just like I was saying, there's no standard. If you're the best comedian in, let's just say, North Carolina, are you even the best? You know what I mean? Like, who are you playing against? And then two is that, just like you're saying, with a lot of these bigger headliners nowadays, they'll take their boys, which, I mean, we'll probably run into these same problems to where they're taking their boys out for so long that it's like...
they don't even want to touch
you. You got a 40-year-old opener.
Right. Yeah.
A 40-year-old opener, like, that's it. Yeah. That's as good as he's going to get.
Right.
Yes. That's as good as that guy's going to get.
That's what I like about D.L. Hughley. He has Clint Coley.
Okay.
Oh, that's cool.
And then he has Bodacious. It's almost, so you got like a guy in his late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you got a guy that's in his early 40s.
Yeah, Bo's my guy. Shouts out to Bo, actually.
Then, yeah,
Bo's the homie. I know Bo through Leonard Oots, and, you know, Virginia. Both of them is from Virginia or whatever. But, yeah, sometimes you see that to where, actually, the funny thing is, and I don't know if both of you know this, but Seinfeld and Chris Rock had the same opener for a while. Remember, it was Mario, Mario Joyner.
Right.
Really funny dude, but they had to cut him off at some point and go like, you're good enough to be your own thing. Like,
he said on the West End, he said, comedians and cars getting coffee. He said he's comfortable being an opener. He's comfortable being an opener or a feature because he makes good money. And think about it, he has to be making really good fucking money opening for Chris.
Oh, no, he made great money. That was their point. The point was like...
but he's good enough to be his own headliner.
The point was, dude, it's been long enough.
It's time for you to move on.
You've been here on the bottle with the training wheels on, when the reality is you got to be building your own.
You're popping willies with those training wheels
now. And that's damn near it, too. I think they should damn near set a limitation, but I think that's one of the things that stalls and holds the game up to where it's like, oh... for real?
I realized now that statement you just said.
25 years of opening?
Yeah, well, you're saying you got to be on your own. That's the truth. We have to go out and get these fans. Like, ain't nobody else going to get them.
Right, but we need the platforms as well. We don't have some of the platforms we used to have. And just the ways people watch TV are completely different. But we'll get off comedy, man. Growing up in Ohio, how was that, man? Did you kind of stay in the same school system, same town? Did you live there, like, your whole life?
Yeah, I lived pretty much in the same town. There was two different neighborhoods. There was, like, as I like to call, the urban neighborhood and the white neighborhood.
So the white poor section and the black poor section?
kind of. Well, so what happened was, when I was 16... my father...
he's got money. It's the preface. Well, what happened, let me tell you the story.
What happened was the recession.
Right.
Yeah, my father got remarried, and, you know, a 20-minute... to show you, like, people in their cities and stuff would definitely get this, but, like, it's to me, driving, like, 15 minutes out of my hood was, like, crazy. Like, yeah, for me going to go drive to Boardman, world. I'm like, I can't drive to Boardman. I might get arrested or something. You know, like, this is Boardman. You got to have legal plates. Like, you can't have an exhaust. So we were kind of stuck in our little area. Like,
yeah, Youngstown.
And I just stayed in that little town till my dad turned 16. He remarried. And I went to, I guess, what's more known as like a regular school. I don't know. It was like real classes and fucking books. And
hold up. Where'd you go to school?
Oh, I went to the trial. I'm telling you, man. Like, when I say it was the hood, it was like, we went to a high school. Nothing really mattered, man. Like,
nothing really mattered.
Trying to teach you shit.
Like, this just sounds like a Dangerous Mind.
It was, dude. Just like it.
Was Michelle Pfeiffer your teacher?
It was a dude named Mr. Fields. Woodrow Wilson. They shut down.
Ah, Woodrow Wilson. I'm glad it was named after a white dude.
Every time.
No, be flunking at no black school.
Yo, we didn't do
motherfucker
shit.
Come that's back, walk in, and shake his head like, why'd y'all name this motherfucker after me? Everybody here is dumb. This is not what I fought for.
Yeah.
Should be named after Stokely Adam Clayton Powell.
Stokely Carmichael High School. Like, everybody is dumb than a motherfucker.
But like, once they receive the grades, they should change the name. This is now Flavor Flav High School. Until you motherfuckers get these grades up. But he didn't finish high school exactly, dang, motherfucker. But nah, that's cool, man. Did you get in a lot of fights growing up? Were you an only child?
No, I had an older brother, and then later on, after I was 18, a little sister. But yeah, I was my older brother's my half brother. He was never really around. I guess I was kind of an only child. Me and my best friend Dave, we hung out every day. He's more my brother, actually.
Shouts out to Dave. He's the brother.
Yeah,
that's the homie.
He's the comedian, man. If this dude would ever do stand, you know, you got that.
We all got them, man.
I'm telling you, bro, my face would hurt from this dude.
Yeah, we all got them, and I feel like most comedians weren't the guy.
Yeah,
yeah, like the friend of the guy. Yeah.
It's a kid I know I went to high school with named Femi. I've been trying to get this motherfucker on stage for years.
Yeah.
He just won't do it.
You got to
be. He just won't fucking.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of us aren't brave enough to get up there.
That's what he said.
It's just like, yo, it's just strange.
He said, I can't do it. That's a motherfucker. It's what you've been doing since I've known you.
Yeah, but it's different. Funny, once they shine that light on you, bro, it's different.
Yeah, you're right.
So do you remember, like, maybe your first fight?
Oh, yeah, actually, dude. Well, there's two. Well, man, I don't even know if you can call this a fight, but I had one kid, David Green. My father was the type of person, like, he used to kind of just bully people in general. Like, even when he was older, he would, like, I see him just smack somebody and shit. Like, my dad didn't play. Like, and he was just like that. So I kind of had that mentality. Like, and so there was this kid in school, and he was just a dork. And, man, this kid lent me his pencil. I was like, oh, it's a cool color green. It was a crayon. He gave it to me. I just punched him in the stomach, man. I don't know why. I learned from my dad, David Green. And I've been trying to find this kid. If you're out there, I'm so sorry, man. I can't find him nowhere.
See, we got an apology here.
You sent him in a high end, motherfucker.
On the motherfucking Tough Talk podcast, that's a first. Dom Leonelli said he apologizes. He had to have that pencil, though.
Well,
but that's what it is. It's
got hearts now.
A little like growing up in the wild, man. Like, fighting, people frown upon it, and they kind of train you away from it. But the truth is, those are your survival instincts usually kicking in. And most cases, you're going to need it. Like, yeah. They try to remove bullying from schools, but it's like, nah, this is kind of how shit works. This is the food chain, you know?
It's life.
You little, you learn to do homework and other shit. Hide, tell, shit like that. But
you gotta survive.
So you punched this kid over a pencil? It was number two?
No, I apologize to him. It was a crayon, actually, I think, or a colored pencil. I can't remember. You know what it was? It was them big fat crayons when we were in school. It wasn't even his. It was just the school crayon.
So Dom started off young, punching motherfuckers for crayons.
So he gave you the crayon, and then you punched him.
Punched him right after.
That's some bully shit.
He did what you said.
Word up.
Then you punched him.
He you probably, should never be in a hostage situation.
He probably hasn't done what anyone said for a
don't
long time
now.
Don't
look at me. Huh. Wow. It's a great thing you're a comic.
I'll tell you what, I instantly got my karma, because I was on that road of like being like my dad, trying to be tougher than everybody. But see, here's a major difference. My dad boxed, and I never did it this time.
So oh,
I,
yeah.
I couldn't
so
fight.
Your dad knew how to defend him. So.
And I had one time, man, I'm still ashamed to admit this, but I pushed a girl. I remember doing it too, man. I don't even know why I did it. And she punched me. in the eye, straight up. Second grade, dude. She didn't play, man.
There's this weird time period. Like, girls go through puberty first, and they're bigger than dudes.
Yeah.
And there's this weird time period to where probably right about sixth grade where girls are actually bigger than a lot of the boys. And the shit and is funny. Because we all have memories. I remember this girl, Stacey McDowell, still remember her goddamn name to this day. I remember she pushed me and then I just slapped her. But as soon as I did that, she turned into a girl. And I had to be like, nah, nobody saw her push me into the locker. And it was like the second straight day of her just being like, you got glasses and I'm gonna fuck with you.
Oh, shit.
And then from then, everybody just shaking their off head as I got hauled to the office like, hitting girls. And I'm like, this bitch is 6 foot. I'm 5'1". This girl is 6 foot strong and solid. And I think she had flunked grade too. So she knew what she was doing. But as soon as I did that shit, everybody judged me. And ever since then, it's like, all right, no more touching the girls because everybody's just going to judge you. Even if you win, you lose.
They get word up. They get away with murder with that shit, man.
You got to be Jay-Z in the elevator. You got to gotta use the block button. A lot of the block button going on. But yeah, man, that's a weird period. What do you remember, like, your first win or your best win maybe at fighting?
Yeah, I'd say through boxing, it was probably, you know, it was funny. My worst loss came from that girl because I lied to my dad. I didn't tell him I pushed a girl. He said, what happened? I was like, oh, I tried to make it like one of his fight stories. And I was like, oh, Anthony pulled a knife out on me.
So you was Jussie Smollett?
Yeah, Jussie Smollett. And my dad knew him. He's like, oh, Vico's son.
He was like, they had MAGA hats. I was going to get a sandwich.
He called me gay too, Dad.
Oh, your dad?
No.
Oh, he's just making up shit. Gay Tupac, baby. Hey, yeah, sometimes you gotta tell a lie, yo.
He brought me to that kid's house, Anthony. And we fought, and that kid whipped my ass. He's like, as soon as Anthony answers the
door. Oh, wait a minute. You lied on Anthony. Yeah. And your dad was like, felt like you were lying and was like, let's go ask Anthony.
Yeah, he's like, no. You know, my dad was like, listen, as soon as Anthony opens up that door, punch him in the face or I'm hitting you. This is about being a man. And Anthony was my friend, man. He opened up the door, and I just, everything I got, man, I smacked him.
That's funny. Anthony don't know shit about this.
Oh, he was like, hi, dog.
Yeah.
Like, yo, man, I got that new game.
And your dad standing right there?
Yeah, and Anthony whipped my ass all over the front.
So, hold on. You got beat up twice. Once by a girl and another time for lying.
Yeah. And then my dad slapped the shit out of me.
So, three times.
CPS, if you're listening, I don't condone parents fighting. But that's why I try to have this podcast to talk about it. It's like, life really doesn't prepare you for fights or confrontation. If you're lucky, you get someone to say to you, like, basically, hey, this shit's gonna happen. And when even now, as a 30-something-year-old man, I see kids get into it, and I am confused about which way to take. Because it's like,
you need that.
One is like, break it up. Because damn, I don't want to see nobody get hurt. Or, you know, there's a better way to solve this. But then you're like, is there a better way to solve this? Then sometimes when you see a kid lose too, you got to remember, I don't know what that little motherfucker did.
Yeah. So, sometimes you just got to lose. It's like, sometimes you just got to wear that. You got
to
wear that
sometimes
ass.
Sometimes you got to learn to hold that L.
I remember, man, because I told you, I grew up in an era of jumping motherfuckers. Like, I wasn't it. That's why a lot of my shit was just trying not to get jumped. Like, I was dolo. Like, I would fight one-on-one, but a lot of them motherfuckers would jump. So, we got a lot of cowards. So,
trying not to get jumped.
That's what it was. It was like, look, motherfuckers would always talk shit with all their boys around. And some of their boys would be your boys. It was a weird thing. You know what I mean? It was just this tangled web.
I'm glad fucking I'm in that era.
So, hold on. But you told a lie. You lied on a girl.
Yeah.
Your father had you go to this kid's house. So, what did he tell you? He told you as soon as this kid comes out,
punch him in the face. He's like, as soon as he opens
the door. Does he open the door, is that kid's dad home or just that kid?
I don't know, to be honest. We never found.
So what's your father was there? The father was there.
He was just standing right there. He's like, come on, get up, son. I was
just kidding. Sir, it's like John Witherspoon and Friday.
Yeah.
Come on, son. I've been down before.
Yeah. He's like, hit him back. Dude, I was just fucking, I was just getting my ass beat. This kid just went crazy.
Is he older than you?
My age. Kid? Oh, I actually judge? Seen him. Dude, I was in the park and I seen this dude. I was like, what you been up to? He's like, man. Truthfully, just trying to rob people, get some money. I swear to God, man. Yeah.
That probably set him off. That one incident probably set him off.
Yeah, ever since you lied on him.
You lied on him. He's been
fucking.
He probably was a good kid, and then he whooped your ass, and then it sent him
into the downward spiral.
10 years in prison, manslaughter.
God damn.
Damn, man. That's crazy.
You said it all started with slaughtering Dom
in front of his own dad. Did your dad ever bring that shit up again later? Like,
yeah, he said, man, are you serious? I mean, I was an asshole. I'm sorry for that. I told him about it. I said,
you told him you lied?
Yeah, yeah.
So have you lied since?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. That's funny.
He tried not to involve other people.
Yeah, man.
All his eyes are on him. It's like,
yeah, man, that's crazy. So you took that out. Can you tell us like your best win?
Best win, man, hands down. I wish I still had the tape from this.
Okay.
I used to box a little in Ohio, and I was okay. But so, anyways, more than being a good boxer, is I had my uncles all cut hair. They had barbershops. So they were able to meet a lot of people. So they had these tickets to the fights. They would sell them. And they're, oh, Dom's fighting. So everybody that come to the barbershop would buy these $10 tickets. So promoters would be like, yo, who's this kid? Dom sold like $1,000 worth of tickets. Yeah. So I started getting the bigger venues. So I had a fight one time. And it was like, you know, honestly, probably about like 500 people. Biggest fight I ever had was 4,500 people. I got my ass beat. But
4,500 people and you lost?
And I got
was it good
out.
Or bad? Oh, damn, bad. You got knocked out.
Once you get knocked out in front of your girl, she will never look at you.
Yeah, that's it, that man. Even if that dude's damn good, it could be Mike Tyson. And she's like, nah, because you lost.
He turned out to be the second best amateur in the country, but then he got like a car accident or something.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Why does everybody fuck with you tragic? Mm-hmm. One dude but, just got out of prison after beating your ass.
The other dude's quadriplegic.
This shit is bad.
Yeah. What happened?
This shit is worse than Precious. This is worse than the end of the Precious. Lee Daniels directed your life. That's crazy, man. So you started boxing and you lost in front of 4,500 people. What's your win loss record?
No, we had a lot of exhibitions. I don't know. I remember at one point I was 4-0, but then I lost a couple and I had like an exhibition, but not more than like 13 fights. I probably lost 3, draw 1. But dude, this one fight, I sold all these tickets. I sold pretty much every ticket to this one place.
Damn.
And it was a lot of people. Like it was a big room, whatever. And the person I was supposed to fight didn't show up. And they were like, dude, you know, you still got to fight, so we're gonna just get you somebody. So they just
we're just gonna get you somebody. They just toss somebody into the ring.
Did they ever? Game, they just grabbed somebody. Yo, this dude was about your size, man. I was 130 pounds.
So it's pickup boxing. I done played pickup basketball before. Yo, you doing anything? You got about 20 minutes. Come get on the court.
Yeah.
You out there with your hands around your
out there in
neck.
Some church pants, but I didn't know it was I didn't know it was a such thing as pickup boxing. Yo, somebody just walked into the gym, yo, I got next.
You're in church pants. The dude showed up in some fucking church pants.
Don't you have like your name on your trunks and shit? So,
yeah.
So he's wearing somebody else's trunks.
Dude, that is funny.
Did they ever figure out where the other dude went?
Nah. I don't know.
He just went MIA. Show up.
Dude went MIA.
No, it's funny if they did it like a bringer. Hey, nobody bought tickets for you. You're off the fight. Yeah. They gave you the bringers.
How the fuck did you decide to get... Well, you said your dad was a boxer. So about what age did you get into boxing?
I started taking it serious at like 14 and a half, 15. I was going to the gym and I actually was pretty good. But I don't know. My trainer didn't really work with me too much. I wasn't that committed, but when I was good.
Yeah, man, that's a tough thing. What do you think's tougher? You think what's worse, getting knocked out or bombing?
I definitely say getting knocked out. That's why I never even really cared for bombing because I'm like, yo, man.
That's what I would think. See, Ibrahim used to box too, and I would think, yeah, hell yeah. Why would you give a fuck that people ain't lying?
Your ass
it's better than waking up and trying to figure out where the fuck you at.
Yo, you ain't lying, man. You know, they had this dude. So they just pulled him. He could, you know, and my dad's like, man, dude's way bigger than you. I'm nervous. I remember him talking to me before. And actually, you know what's cool, man? This fight, a world champion worked my corner, Kelly Pavlik, if you're a boxing guy.
Oh, yeah. Kelly
he worked Pavlik. My corner for this really? Fight I'm telling you about. And what he said did work, but not to mention, dude, they pulled this dude aside, and I'm looking. Like, you know, you try to size up the fighter, and they were showing him how to throw a jab. Like, it was clear that this dude never fought in his life.
Wow.
And, man, I just went in, whipped his ass for 2 rounds. Bad. He didn't know what the fuck he was doing.
Quit or was it TKO?
Yeah, he quit. Quit from a body shot at the beginning of the second round. Yeah.
Threw in the towel. That's funny, because in, like, street fights, everyone's going for the face. But if a motherfucker ever just decided to hit you in your chest, I remember I used to play baseball, first grade probably, and the pitcher was out. My stupid ass is pitching now. I don't know how to pitch. I'm throwing that shit right over the plate. And that motherfucker hit that shit and came straight back and hit me right in the chest.
Oh, shit.
I felt like...
Hit you right off your feet.
Yeah, I was like Saget for a week. You know how you had a little imprint right there? Like how Saget got hit with that Ryu, hit him with that uppercut, and he got that scar across his chest. I was like him for like a week, boy. I remember my mama had to put so much fucking Vicks ass on my chest. And then she put that shit on there. It was burning even more. But yeah. I was like, yo, fuck? Yeah, getting hit in the chest, that shit is the worst.
Body shots.
Body shots is the worst.
It'll change your whole mental state on what's going on.
If you fucking tone your midsection up, you can take them pretty good. But if they ever hit you with like one of them, like right, like in that corner, right where your abdomen meets your rib cage or the liver, it's a wrap. It's a wrap.
You be sitting there for a whole. You get a chance of so
think of is, remember, what was the shit? Was it Kickboxer with Van Damme? Yeah. When the dude Tom Poe, that was, how you say, he was from Thailand, right?
Oh, yeah.
Remember, he was taking the coconuts to the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, right before the fight, that motherfucker's hitting his head against the poles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He had to go out there and fight that motherfucker.
He was kicking until the plaster was falling down.
Yeah, that was a serious movie, bro. Remember they had the fight in the end. They dipped their hands in the glass.
Glass, yep.
That shit was serious.
Wait, was that Kickboxer or Bloodsport? That wasn't
Kickboxer.
That was Kickboxer.
Bloodsport was another one.
You know, that guy was, you know that guy was a phony. The guy...
Frank Dukes?
Frank Dukes was a phony.
And Bloodsport? In real life?
In real life. I'm saying, he, you know, they wrote that movie... based on some shit he was telling them. Come to find out this motherfucker
was... he was making it all up.
Sociopath.
He was just like you, dumb. Yeah, he's lying.
He was lying like a motherfucker.
His dad needed to take him to his friend's door. And be like, yo, you said this shit? You down here, Jussie Smollett. Yeah. And kick his ass real quick. That's what they should have done. Let two motherfuckers in MAGA hats have him. I'm still trying to figure out which part of the Klan carries bleach. Motherfucker said they had bleach, but his clothes wasn't bleached. Like, all right, they was on their way from the laundromat, I guess.
Should have bugged me out when they said he was still wearing the noose when the cops showed
up. Like, come on,
yeah,
Jussie.
Why would you take that?
Motherfucker
extra like a motherfucker.
Still had chapstick on. Like, dude, why are you ready for a photo op right now? It's very much like an actor, but nah, you know what? That makes me think of is that those movies were happening back then. That was like pre-UFC. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it probably existed in the undergrounds in Arizona somewhere, but I'm saying like pre what you see on TV. So that was all people had to get off on.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Which I still can't really fuck with UFC because I think one is you just grew up watching actual boxing.
Yeah.
And there's some honor in it. Once somebody goes to the ground, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
These motherfuckers is on the ground just pounding each other. And I'm like, if you can watch that, you can just about watch somebody get their ass murdered. Like, I don't know if I want to see that.
UFC to me kind of, because it's called mixed martial arts, but now, like, it's become its own style altogether. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like they're all training the same. It's not like I have a specialty, you have a specialty. Let's fight, because that's how UFC started.
Exactly, MMA.
Right, but now it's literally,
God,
we're doing the same
not
shit.
Specialists.
Like, I'm 30% wrestler, but I'm better with a stand-up game.
Same moves. You're a 30.
Yeah, same everything. Everyone has the same moveset. Versus if you have you're a specialist in point fighting.
Yeah.
And I'm a judo guy.
I was saying some
that's
shit.
That's some shit. You know what I mean? Like, you throw a kick, I'm throwing you across the fucking ring.
I said some shit one time, and I think y'all both know Louis Gomez, boy. He threw me to the wolves. I was talking about MMA, and I said, white guys love that shit because they lack the rhythm to box. So they can get on the ground, and who has rhythm on the ground? But yeah, that shit is just funny to me because, yeah, I can't watch it. They're barefoot, they're naked. That shit is wild.
I'm the same way with it. I get bored even watching when they're just choked up for 10 minutes.
It's too much.
Some of that conditioning is
people
good,
trying to choke each other. You watching that shit like, does somebody owe somebody money?
I need a backstory. Well,
Like
porn.
Some type of backstory.
I need a backstory. What's happening?
You did that shit once?
Yeah, my cousin was doing it, and on the ground, it was funny. The trainer was all like, okay, now, he couldn't touch my boxing. Standing up, this is the trainer of the place. I'm getting him boxing.
Yeah.
And he couldn't shoot me down or whatever he's trying. I'm moving and shit, boxing normal, shit, right? Yeah. And then he's like, all right, now let's go on the ground. And even, like, just hold me here.
You're like, why would I volunteer
to
go on the ground?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying to where I'm like, the only motherfucker that lacks the rhythm.
Yeah, you ain't
white people was like, look, it's been 50 years since Jack Johnson started knocking motherfuckers out. And we got to.
Rocky Marciano been out the game a long time.
We got to do something. First it was Rocky. Now let's just try a whole new sport.
Yeah, you ain't lying.
But yeah, I can't.
They couldn't fuck with Gracie because Gracie was choking everybody the fuck out.
Too much watch that shit. All right, let me ask y'all something while y'all both here. I started a crazy argument in the barbershop because somebody was talking about Layla Ali.
Okay.
And all I was explaining to them was that I'm trying to remember them going from memory right now. Mm-hmm. She was 124 pounds, I think, mm-hmm. when she was boxing. And I said to him, I'm like, yo, it's the reason.
She's a little heavier than that, but go ahead.
You might be right. I can't remember off the top of my head.
More like a 140.
She was 130. Nah, she was like, she was lightweight, though. And I was like,
not like for a woman.
Not for a woman. But I'm saying, all I was saying to them, they were like, nah, so you saying you can beat her? I said, no. I said, it's a reason it's illegal to hit a woman. I said, she lacks the upper body strength. And I was like, I'm saying I can neutralize her. I can wrap her up. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know, man.
Skill-wise, I know she'd tear my fucking face off. If it was a boxing match, but we were talking about just fighting. I would wrap her up like I do my little sister when she gets too high.
She a little taller than you.
Yeah, so she got the reach.
She got the reach. I don't know, man. Women, I don't underestimate when women have that fury. And then we, because it's implanted in us, we're a little hesitant when it comes to dealing with chicks. You know what I mean? Like, even if you do, it is a sense of hesitation.
It's a pro boxer.
I ain't hesitating. Yeah, you ain't hesitating. Yeah. But what I'm saying, like, even you're like, yo, it's a chick. You know what I mean? So you're going to kind of get a little fucked up.
Because I told somebody
that. It ain't going to be no neutralizing. You. Like, that's what I'm saying. You're going to be in a full-out motherfucking fight.
Yeah.
It ain't going to be no neutralizing.
I'm going
to be rocks. I told somebody that about Ronda Rousey, where I was like, I'm going off the top of my head, and you got your phone, but pull up that weight sometime to where I'm like
120.
I'm like, yo, she would throw a punch. I'd probably catch it. I'd probably wrap her up, and we'd go to the ground.
So you saying them hands is so lethal, I couldn't wrap them up. If you grab her, that's
over for your face.
Yo, that's over for you because she's a Olympic judo champion.
See,
because
I was saying that judo, about...
Bro, it don't matter how big or small those motherfuckers are. They will throw you. No, they will throw because it's technique.
Because I was saying that about Mayweather and McGregor when they were talking about that fight, which... It happened, and it was like, come on, dude.
Mayweather carried
it. But I was saying, even in MMA, I think he could beat him because his hands. Ooh, I don't think he could get close to him.
No.
So you think McGregor would definitely win that, too?
Yes, because then you could use your feet. He can take him down.
That would be something to see, and I thought they were going to do that. Wasn't that their plan?
He will actually get his ass whooped.
I believe that too. I feel like Mayweather is such a good boxer. It's just a different level. Like,
I don't think you could get close to him.
Yeah, like when it comes to boxing, he just got that art form down. Like McGregor didn't stand
but
a chance.
But if McGregor sweeps his leg,
yeah, if it goes to MMA, I don't know how comfortable Mayweather's going to be on his back.
Yeah, he's fucked. He's fucked, though.
Like, so that, you think that technique is too heavy? The MMA that? Technique would be too heavy for him?
Because you can use everything. Hmm. It's one thing if Mayweather did kickboxing on the side, then you'd be like,
you know what's right, he can hang
because he can use his legs. Yeah. He's used to using his legs to attack. You're used to using your legs to evade and keep distance while still getting your offense off in boxing, right?
Yeah.
So if you're in MMA, their whole thing is using your entire body as a weapon, and you're not used to that in boxing. You know what I mean? So if he was doing, like I said, if he was doing K1, if he was taking Muay Thai, or something like that, where he got used to and conditioning his legs to throw blows, to be able to counter like a shoot, like a dude shot at his legs, and he can counter them with his legs, then I'd be like, all right, maybe. He can hang with him for three rounds. But not doing anything?
I tell you what's interesting about all of this stuff. It's 7, so Dom, if you want to go ahead and ride out.
Damn, that went by quick, man. I enjoyed hanging with y'all, man. Nice talking to you.
This is going to come out Monday. So.
Oh, sweet. Quick.
So, Dom, real quick, tell them where they can find you on social media, man.
Check out my Instagram at Dom of NYC. Dom is my name, Dom. DOMOFNYC. That's no dominatrix shit. Don't be sending me pictures of swollen nuts or not. Just fuck up. I got to say that. People send me some fucked up shit because of that. But it's Dom of NYC. And YouTube, I tell some other fight stories if you want to hear. It's Dom's Details. That's one word. Dom's Details on YouTube.
Any shows coming up next week? Next week?
I got Caroline's. I'm actually hosting January 13th at 8 o'clock. Come through Caroline's.
January 13th, 8 o'clock. Yo, thanks for coming through.
Man, appreciate
go ahead.
You.
Get out of here. Yo, get to your show. Me and Eve going to rock out real quick here for a couple of minutes. We got a couple of subjects to run through. We was just talking about fighting. What I was going to tell him, actually, and he would have been good on, too, was interesting about that fighting shit is, I think we mentioned Ronda Rousey, right? Mm-hmm. That, like, how women's MMA really is just starting. Mm-hmm. So, like, the same way they say, like, Jackie Robinson was the first, but he wasn't the best.
Right.
Willie Mays coming behind him was considered the best black player, right? And how it's like these learning curves of, like, they'll hold somebody up because even remember Kimbo Slice.
Yeah.
When people were like, he's the best. And then he got his, that first fight, they put him on TV, national televised, and he lost. I mean, rest in peace to
him.
Did
he lose? I thought he won.
Nah, he lost. Remember, really? It was a big loss.
I thought he won his first fight.
Maybe it wasn't his first, but the big one. Remember, they got like a contract with like ABC.
Right.
It was big and national, and it was supposed to be the thing
that
got it over the hump. Right. And then he lost.
Yeah.
And then people were like, wait a minute.
He didn't have the conditioning.
Right. Because he was a street brawler.
It's not so much that. I think he really, that heart condition really fucked with him. You know, that's what he died of. He died of a heart condition. So he probably always had a problem with his conditioning. It's the same thing with old boy. What's my man, Anthony Joshua? I was telling somebody, I was like, yo, Anthony Joshua, when you watch him fight, I don't know if you ever watched him.
Yeah.
He breathe real heavy. Like, he don't have good conditioning. I'm like, yo, he might have a heart problem or he might have something.
Yeah.
Because, like, when he beat Klitschko, he outlasted Klitschko. He didn't really beat him. Klitschko old as fuck. You're young. You hit him, he fell. But if he would have knocked him down one more time, that fight would have been over.
Yeah,
it's like,
Klitschko,
and I saw him watch
Klitschko, that big ass Russian, looked like he was made in the lab.
Both of them motherfuckers, Ivan Drago for real.
Drago for real,
They don't even look like they punch hard. They look like a lot of their punches are slaps, and they still be fucking motherfuckers up.
Yeah, but shit, if you keep pounding, that's
I don't know, right, Ronda was great because Ronda was obliterating the competition, but... You know, like you said, the women's division was still in its infancy.
Yeah.
She didn't fight like a Chris Cyborg.
Like, I always feel like there's that learning curve because, like I said, even with Kimbo, and I'd have to go back and look it up, but I'm pretty sure
he was
the first
sensation.
Fight they took put, him on primetime, and then he lost, and it was like, and then the same with Rousey, where they kind of hyped her, and then was it Nunes, the girl that was actually...
Yeah, it was after a while.
Yeah, she was like a world-class, like,
no, it wasn't Nunes that beat her. It was the white girl. The
I'm
white girl beat up
the
first.
Name.
She was a boxer. She used to be a boxer.
Yes.
And, she
and the girl came with mad experience.
She beat
and that's the thing, like you were saying, to where it's like the learning curve and then people catch up to the style. But and the then maybe was, the even girl will come fought. From other shit that they're better
the, right. The girl who beat her was a world class boxer.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
But she also had an she also had a size advantage on Rousey.
Yeah,
she was taller than her.
But I'm saying to where her, the sport's like, so new, it's like yeah. new contestants coming. Like, oh, I'm sure I could do that.
Right.
Almost
right.
how Marion Jones. Well, I guess that wouldn't be the same, but similar. Marion Jones,
the sprinter.
Remember, she played basketball though.
Oh, okay.
And she was just faster than
but
everybody.
She was a two sport athlete though.
Yeah,
she didn't like play basketball and then say, "Oh, I want to be a sprinter."
No,
she was doing
but
same
what
time.
I'm saying is that skill translated so heavy into that because okay, she yeah, just yeah. would blow right past people.
I was just watching something with Joe Rogan was talking about CM Punk. I was watching old video. You know, CM Punk, the wrestler.
Okay, yeah.
He tried to do MMA. Right. It was horrible. He got his ass whooped. He had two fights, I think, maybe two or three.
CM
and he got
Punk.
His ass beat. And Joe Rogan was talking about him like, look, he's not an athlete. Like, he's not like, he's used to being in a scripted environment with wrestling.
Oh, he did it after wrestling?
Yeah, he became an MMA
he was
fighter.
Wilding.
He was getting his ass beat.
You have to put the Punk part first.
Bruh, it was beating the shit out of him.
Punk CM.
But yo, like, Rogan was like, yo, you can tell he doesn't have athletic bone in his body pretty much. You know what I mean?
He's
but
more
I
of an actor. He's a big guy
that,
and an actor.
Yeah, but he's not even a big guy. He's a small dude with no physique. But this is the shit that I used to see about him when he was in wrestling. My son ended up be watching him. I'm like, this dude is terrible. Like, you could tell by him wrestling.
Mechanics
like, he used to like come across. And the funny thing was, his whole shtick in wrestling was he was a fucking martial artist.
Got
so
it.
He would do these kicks and do all this shit.
Yeah.
But now you in a ring with real martial artists and you don't know what the fuck you're doing. It was,
nah, of course not.
He wasn't like a Brock Lesnar. Brock
but
Lesnar
see, that's why I was saying a lot of shit just doesn't translate.
Brock Lesnar
was
a world-class wrestler. And he went in UFC and dominated a little bit.
Oh, Brock Lesnar did make the transition. And then, like, yeah, Kurt Angle that went from Olympic pro wrestling or Olympic wrestling to regular wrestling.
Yeah, but he was a legit athlete.
Yeah, yeah, you exactly. I mean? So maybe it works one way, but not the other way. Right. Which people always hit you with, oh, wrestling, but it's so fake. And it's like, porn's fake. That bitch ain't a nurse.
Yeah.
Like, people always
be like, yo, you know they did edit this. They did not fuck for 30 minutes.
Yeah,
straight.
Them
like,
people ain't really getting taken. It's been three movies. Like, no. Not at all. So people always want to bring that up for wrestling and try to ruin it for people. I just wanted to run through some things real quick. Of course, we seen the flicks of some of our fellow comedian friends at the SNL after party.
Oh, yeah.
We all had to send that text like, yo, y'all couldn't call your boy, though?
I was just chilling, man.
But nah, I actually looked at it right at like probably 10:30 and decided, damn, I'm in the house. Got me some good old bullet bourbon, sat down like, yo, I'm about to actually watch SNL. Like, I'm about to really check it out. Like, I enjoyed it, man. Nostalgically.
Not me.
I never did watch SNL, though. I was always a Mad TV guy. But when Eddie comes back, you gotta TV. Fucking watch SNL, man.
Yeah, I just didn't like it. I didn't like it. It was too stuck on nostalgia for me. And a lot, and they didn't really, to me, this is what it did. It wasn't Eddie. Eddie was Eddie.
Yeah.
To me, it showed, for me, how weak the writing in SNL really is at this point.
Because
my thing is, it was Eddie stuck in, you get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. It was like a lot of plug and play.
It wasn't
but
like anything that was
to
really
me,
dope.
That was why they did it, was to show and to nostalgic and just run updates on
really
some of the pieces that he was running.
Though. Like,
I enjoyed
Mr. Robinson's
it.
It was predictable.
I enjoyed it, but I get what you said.
It was predictable.
But it was literally a plug and play of like, and I think some of those things are just like when someone's on the 4th-and-1 on the goal line, take it right up the middle. What is it called? A halfback
sneak?
Yeah, halfback sneak, fullback dive.
Be direct. Like, but my thing is,
hand the ball off, take it right down the middle.
But my thing is, I always look at the hype. If you're gonna hype something, you should at least have the episode meet the hype.
But
I don't think they hyped it.
I think it was the anticipation of him not being there for 30 years. I did like that he got over the whole, whatever the joke was, that was it Chevy Chase that made the joke?
Oh, you took no.
The Fallen Star joke no, that pissed Eddie off. That
was David Spade.
David Spade. David Spade did the gall of David Spade to be making a joke about Eddie Murphy.
But isn't it? But he did the joke. But wasn't it okayed by Lauren or something like? Was
well,
it
yeah, like nothing gets on the show without. You know,
I'm saying, but it was like it was kind of supposedly pushed. Like, oh, let's do that. A little shot at him for leaving the show.
I guess there is some level of maybe he should have tougher skin, but then it's also a level of like I'm the reason that shit exists.
Still exists.
Yeah, it's like.
But then again, it's a show run by a white guy. So that show is going to be around. I mean,
fair enough.
That show is going to be around regardless. It's an institution. But you know what I mean?
I enjoyed it. And I mean, obviously, when you say institution, I wish they'd have kept Mad TV or In Living Color or some of that shit going longer. But it is what it is.
They made way more meaningful stars.
It is what it is. Well, who's more meaningful? Than Eddie Murphy.
But I'm saying...
And you're saying maybe after
but I'm
that.
Talking about Jim Carrey, oh, Jamie no. Foxx, without Chris
doubt.
Rock.
Without a doubt.
Sean and Marlon.
I mean, but Rock was on SNL too,
but,
so...
And yeah, then came but he got fired and he came over.
And then came over.
You know what I mean? And
like,
he did
this
more
is the show
sketches.
You should be on.
He did more sketches over there. It's the same thing. Damon was on SNL.
Was he?
Yeah, they fired him.
That's crazy.
They fired Damon.
Well, it's just like a sports team where sometimes they just don't know what to do with certain people. Which, I mean, obviously, them just having an Asian character is like, we live in New York City, dog.
And it seemed like all they did was make him play ball.
How many Asian characters are, you know, you see 40 Asians on your way to work. Mm-hmm. And Hispanics and everything else. So, yeah, that's always a major oversight. But I enjoyed it, especially the monologue. The little shot at Cosby. I was like,
he could have did
fair enough.
Yeah, he could have
because Cosby took them shots at him when it, early on, you know. So.
But he did the joke. This is the thing.
On Raw.
He did the joke on Raw.
I hear you.
He did the joke on Raw. He did the joke when he did the Mark Twain.
But
Mark
I especially
Twain
thought it was dope to see Eddie, Chappelle, Rock,
yeah,
all
of
the stage
photo op
together.
It was
because
good for
people,
comedy hype.
People try. Oh, God, no. Nothing's good for comedy hype.
That was good for comedy
nothing's
hype.
Nothing's good for comedy.
People inspiration.
No, stop.
Black
stop.
Excellence.
Stop. You want to
romanticize shit.
Huh? You want to get me started? Talk to me about fucking comedy hype. Oh, my God. Boy, they got
another episode.
They got that shit right, boy. Hype.
Yeah.
Like, motherfucker, you got a platform. Shine some light on some of these comedians. All they do is dig up people and get them to say something bad.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck what Faison Love thinks of Dave Chappelle?
It's good fucking...
Well, it gets people talking. Gets people the gossip and bullshit yeah. gets
but
people
talking.
But my thing
is, that's one of the things that you do. Like, I was just talking about protecting the business. It's like with, like I said, with wrestling. It's like, you know about kayfabe. You know that things were supposed to stay insular. Like, if you're the Iron Sheik and I'm Hulk Hogan, we're fucking mortal enemies. Nobody's right. supposed to see us driving down the Garden State Parkway together onto
smiling
our next gig,
and
smiling
whatever.
And drinking and getting bitches. Nobody's supposed to
which
know that.
Which is funny because
it's the
now
same thing
they
comedy.
Got the cameras and everyone gets to see everything. Like you said, they pulled
so
the
now with comedy,
up.
Comedy don't have that because everybody can't be in every green room. They can't be in. So everything that's supposed to be behind the scenes with
that's come
amongst us, it's out in
which
the open,
why
which makes everyone believe they're a part of, like you said, the fraternity.
Which is why I don't like that shit. Because, like I said, comedy hype always want to ask, oh, do y'all think such and such is funny? And it's like, that's some trolling ass shit, you know. Yeah. Most people are negative online. They sitting at work doing whatever the fuck they boss got to say. Hell
right.
yeah, they gonna write in the comments that they not funny.
Right.
Because what does it cost them to do that?
They're not risking anything.
And yeah. that's the thing people forget. Social media, man. People get caught on how many followers I had to manage them. Actually, a black one talked to me about followers. And it's like, that shit is a bunch of children. And it's free.
Mm-hmm.
All that shit is free. Ask them motherfuckers to come pay for tickets to a show. Now, obviously, I'm smart enough to understand that if you have 5 million followers, then the likelihood
the percentage of 10%
of
them
6%
of
them yeah. coming to a show are
greater.
Greater.
Yeah.
But also, like I said, a lot of that shit is children. Mm-hmm. Even a lot of them Instagram models and shit. It's like, don't get gas. Your followers are 12-year-old boys.
That jerking
into these
and it's a bunch
pictures.
Of motherfuckers that want to fuck you.
Well, obviously.
They're not fans. They're not people who are supporters. It's like... Yeah. No, it's catcalls. It's if you have 2 million followers, that's just 2 million catcallers.
That's just my frustration a little. That's why, like I said, the way comedy hype and different people troll, Shade Room and all this stuff. You know, who is the funniest black comedian? You know, you see some of these memes where, you know, they got Cat, one person must go, and it's a picture of, you know, Kevin Hart, Cat Williams,
who's the opener, who's
Dave
the...
Chappelle. Not even that, because that's at least giving everybody a job. But I'm saying these, well, one of them must go, Kevin Hart, Dave Chappelle, Cat Williams, Chris Rock, one must go. It's like, why the fuck we still got the goddamn only... two niggas can be in the house mentality of like,
right.
No, this is real life. One of them don't have to go. There's room for them all.
For them all, right?
Then when
they
you
all
see
on the same show.
Mike Epps come on Breakfast Club and diss Kevin Hart, and then Kevin Hart come on there and have to defend himself, he always tries to keep himself in a positive space. He tries not to take shots at people, but people are so messy because the media's messy. Because they basically troll you and ask you, oh, what you think of, and you know that motherfucker don't like him. He already told you that 3 interviews ago.
Right.
So, yeah, and then, you know, Cat, you know, dissing everybody. And it's just like, yo, these memes become real life to where people really do start to feel like one of them has to go. But that's what I'm saying.
I think Cat, this is what I... Go ahead, finish it up.
But that's why I'm saying it was great to see them three because people try. People talk to Rock and then Rock will always go, I think Chappelle's the best. And Chappelle will always go, I think Rock's the best. And then they both will be like, but Eddie's the god or whatever, you know.
Right.
Once Richard passed, it kind of became Eddie, the elder statesman.
Right. This is the funny thing, like people was debating because it got into a heated debate about the Cosby joke or whatever, And this is the point that I made. I said, you know, the irony about the thing he got with Cosby is that when Cosby said, hey, come to me, I'm down in Atlantic City, I think it was.
Yeah.
He said, and watch me and I'll show you how it's done. The irony of that is that, yes, people, they say he was out of line for saying what he said to Eddie, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, when I looked at it, and I think I may have said this in that thread, Cosby's doing comedy up until the scandal. Well into his 70s.
Yeah.
Selling out theaters on a humble.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You know what's
crazy? What I'm saying is we are sitting here wondering what type of stand-up comedian Eddie's going to be after 35 years away. So my thing was if I even play devil's advocate and I go Cosby was out of line. Which he was. A lot of people say he was.
Oh, right? to say that to Eddie,
that come and watch me to see how it's done.
Yeah.
Who's to say that if he would have gone and seen how Cosby worked, that Eddie probably would have never taken a break from stand-up comedy. You understand what I'm saying? It's because Eddie doesn't know what type of comic he's going to be. Gotcha. You got to think of, he's sitting in a position, the best thing for me, for Eddie, look outside looking in, it's just my opinion, is that what made him... What made him, in terms of stand-up, is the fact that he left when he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he never had an inkling or gave you an inkling that he was coming back.
It's like the argument that's made for Biggie.
Right, he died.
In
he
my
died
opinion,
young. Tupac, same
that's
thing.
The best 2-album run ever.
Right.
Ready to Die is my favorite album of all time, rap. Yeah, America's Most Wanted, Ice Cube, is up there because it's... It's sampled in the beginning of Ready to Die, so you know where he got the idea from.
Right.
It's the East Coast
version. So it's the same thing.
Of.
It's like it preserves his mystique.
Yes.
So it's the same thing with Eddie.
To
so my
where,
thing
yeah,
is,
it's preserved
and then
mystique.
People are like, oh, we're waiting.
Never
on.
Got
and
into
this
the
thing
tip
that bugs
special.
Me out too. People go with the hype behind Eddie right now with everyone is, Eddie's blah, 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 blah. I'm like, remember, this guy wasn't like just gone. He put movies out. Some were good, a lot were bad.
Yeah,
like we've seen him bomb.
But you know, stand up is a completely
stand-up is
different.
But this is my,
it's,
but this
it's
is my
moving
point.
Parts with movies.
Right, we get it. But this is my point. Had he a lot of shit people were kicked about what Cosby said.
Yeah.
But if you look at the stand up careers, Cosby was doing stand up.
No, so you're
he
saying
was
he outlasted
80 years
him.
Old.
You're saying
he
we
outlasted
need to
him,
see,
and he still
we're
did.
We're saying
it.
We need to see what a. Eddie looks like.
Right. We're wondering what type of comic is he going to be. Is he going to be what he was 35 years ago?
Do you
what is a
think that if Cosby
Eddie
gets
Murphy?
Out of prison, if he survives, he'll come back and do stand-up?
Goddamn right. Yeah. I think
he will. I hope he curses in that next
oh,
special.
Oh, yeah.
And actually tells us
and he'll
exactly
sell out.
What... And tells us
exactly
what happened.
What does he have to lose?
And how it... Yeah.
What does he
have
to lose?
He
already went to jail.
What
I'm saying is like... My thing is... if he came back and he did stand up, if he survives the prison term, if he came out and did stand up, he would probably still be more polished than Eddie.
He's blind.
Because he's been doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's been doing it. From what I understand, he's doing it.
Crazy jokes about being blind.
Or whatever. Which, yeah. But he's been doing it. The thing is, Eddie hasn't done stand-up in 35 years.
But that's the anticipation of him waiting to see. Which is funny.
It's
but
only this is, on our listen, side,
listen,
though.
This is the beautiful part about stand-up. Uh-huh. This is the beautiful part. 35 fucking years. What else could somebody come back to? You think Heather Hunter could come back after 35 years? Would you still turn on hell the tape and watch her ride?
Hell no.
Be like, Hannah.
Vanessa Del Rio, she in her 70s.
She looked like, a little rusty getting up there.
She just had hip surgery.
Mama still got it. That sounds like that would be the name of the tape. Mama still got it. Hey, look, well, don't be good. Somebody clicking that senior button on Pornhub. All right, we close to wrapping up him. Maybe another 15?
Yeah, man.
Queen of Slim. Did you check out Queen
didn't
of Slim?
See it. No, didn't see it. I've heard mixed reviews.
Mixed
from
reviews.
It.
Dog.
I
won't say it was great because I feel like great is overused nowadays. I say it was good. It was a good movie from my perspective. There was a few things that people was debating. There was some few like crazy choices, and I think with artists like Lena Waithe, people don't get symbolism anymore. People take everything literally.
Okay.
Like if me and you shook hands in a film, people would take it as me and you shaking hands, which sometimes you see regular people on Twitter and shit, and you're like, oh, these are people who have no concept of art.
Critics, what they call a motif or whatever, yeah.
This is why critics get paid to write. So a few of the choices were, one was the guy goes into a gas station, and spoilers, folks, because what the fuck? Yeah, I'm not very into the whole spoilers thing, you know. Somehow I wind up losing the clip the last, like, 10 minutes of this podcast, so here I am now doing it myself. Where was I? Oh, Queen of Slim. Yeah, I'm not very into spoilers. If you're a spoilers person, I don't know how the fuck you watch porn, because obviously you know how that ends. I don't know how you watch anything for that matter, you know. But yeah, the movie's been out for like a month now. Like I said, I feel like there was some big misunderstandings, and then even I had some thoughts of my own. Like, one is the title, Queen of Slim. I feel like she made all of the decisions in the movie, and he just kind of followed her lead and followed her orders, if that makes sense. And they gave a lot more to her backstory than they did his. Seemed like she, I think the title Queen and Slim is misleading even. I think she is actually both Queen and Slim. Because, I mean, he's not Slim. She is. And I also don't think he is Queen either. But I think the title, I think she is both Queen and Slim. You know? And like I said, he basically just followed her orders. Which is funny because the whole way they wind up getting pulled over is because she decides on a first date that she's going to take his phone. And he asks for it back, you know. And she won't give it back. So then finally he reaches over and snatches the phone. And as he swerves in the act of driving and trying to take the phone back, they get pulled over. So really the whole movie and stuff, it was kind of her fault. So like I said, I think she's both Queen and Slim. And as for spoilers, we ain't too much interested in that. Like I said, the movie been out for like a month now, so if you haven't seen it, that's on you. I mean, I could literally sit here and talk about any movie. I could sit here and talk about Roots, and y'all would be like, oh, come on, bro, spoiler alert. And it's like, hey, fam, it's been out since 1970 or so. If you haven't seen that, that's on you. But yeah, I was saying how, you know, what was misunderstood online was the guy, while they're on the run, he goes into a gas station and the white guy is a cashier there, you know, young white guy. And he's so busy trying to focus on the gun
that he doesn't even notice that dude's missing or dude is, you know, on the most wanted list and that, you know, he's wanted. And his face is literally on the newspaper right behind the counter that he's working at. But he's so worried about the gun. And I thought, you know, he asked to see the gun and tells him the gas is free if he lets him see the gun. And people were so upset about that decision in the movie. And I'm like, nah, I think she was trying to say something. I think what Lena Waithe was trying to convey was that, you know, white American male youth is so obsessed with guns that nothing else matters, you know. And when you look at, you know, James Holmes, the Batman killer, and when you look at Dylan Roof, you know, that went in the church and shot those 9 black people. You know, very young white males. So I think she was trying to show, you know, in that scene without saying it, that, you know, they're so obsessed with guns that they don't even care to see anything else, you know. All right, guys. Yeah. Just seem to have lost a file here, so I can't quite find the end of the podcast. Hey, I never claimed to be smart, right? But whatever. In any case, we were almost done anyway. What was I talking about? Always yapping about Queen and Slim, the movie. If you haven't seen it, it's a good movie. Go see it. Check it out. It was a lot of things that people was debating online that I couldn't understand why they couldn't understand. Like, it was a lot of symbolism to me. I fucked that word up. Whatever, it's early. I'm trying to fix this episode and get it out there. Yeah, it was a lot of symbolism, like the white dude in the gas station that took the gun. It just felt like America's obsession with guns to me. The guy in the movie seemed to do whatever she said. Like, all the decisions were kind of made by her. Then there's the little boy in the movie, the black boy that winds up shooting the black cop that tells him to go home from the protest. And a lot of people had an issue with that as far as why both characters had to be black. But I think what she was hinting at was kind of the danger that you never know who you might inspire, you know. You might inspire somebody way too young to even understand what's going on and the decisions that you had to make, you know. Their life was put in danger, therefore they had to make a decision that resulted in somebody else losing their life, you know. So I think that's more of what that represented. Then there was the black cop that, when they were in the house, let them escape. He tried to explain to the white cop, like, yo, I think I heard a noise coming from over there. But the white cop was kind of undermining his authority and was like, no, you didn't hear nothing. That's just a bird. What you talking about? And I think at some point he kind of realized, like, oh shit, even if I catch them right now in this garage, this guy who's above me is going to take all the credit for my work. And why let that happen? So he just let them keep going. Then obviously people had issues with the end and where the black guy, you know, the thug, the one with the gold slugs, turned them in. But I think, I mean, statistically speaking, who needs the money more than us, you know? It was very sad the way it ended, you know? But it got me to thinking about some run-ins that I had with cops. Like, I was telling Ibrahim on this now lost segment of the podcast that I had a run-in with a cop back when I lived in Indianapolis. My little sister called me to help her change a flat tire. I go to help her change the flat tire, and for some reason, it's a cop there. I get out the car. It's like 2 in the morning. It's snowy. It's cold. I get out the car, and the cop just yells at me, get back in your car. This is an investigation. Now, he's in an unmarked car, so I'm like, yo, not for nothing, man. I'm more afraid of what my mom will do if I leave you out here on the side of the road with my little sister than what you'll do. Finally, he keeps yelling, yo, get back in your car. This is an investigation. So finally, I say, all right, man, this dude is obviously a little off. You know, he's kind of crazy. Let me just go ahead and get back in my car. And as I go to open my car door, this dude jumps on my back. So naturally, I kind of duck, you know. I've been watching WWF my whole life, you know. I kind of duck to throw him off me. I wind up slamming him in the snow. He gets up out of the snow. As he's on the ground, about to get up. Now I'm mad because now I realize he made me slam him. That was a natural reaction. Like, I'm not a hard ass. I wasn't trying to slam him at all. I was just doing what he told me to do. He told me to leave. So I told him, hey, I'm going to go across the street because I don't trust you. You know what I mean? I'm not leaving you here alone with her. So, yeah, now I done slammed him. I'm looking at him like, yo, where's your badge? Like, where's your gun? Like, what are you doing? Finally, he finds his badge or whatever and starts yelling at me, get on the ground, get on the ground. Now, mind you, it's cold. So I'm like, man, I'm not getting on the ground. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know who you are, where your car is, where your uniform is. He was a plain clothes. So I think he was headed home was what wound up being the story. But it was just like, you could tell as he was yelling at me, get on the ground, like he really wanted me to respect his authority. I don't know why they let these cops be, you know. Like, there should be a certain height you got to be in a certain weight. I don't know why they let these cops be, you know, 5'2", you know. And I'm not too big myself, you know. I'm 5'4", 5'6", with platforms on, if this was the 70s. But, yeah, he was just a very small guy. It was very obvious, you know. He probably didn't get any respects on the street outside of when he was in his uniform. Because the way he had to yell at me was like crazy. Yo, get on the ground. Get on the ground. Like I said, it's snowing. So I'm like, yo, fuck you. I'm not doing none of that. So finally another cop car pulls up. And the cops, you know, got their guns out. And they like, yo, get on the ground. So naturally, I don't want them to see me resisting arrest. Because you know how that winds up. You wind up being a hashtag. I don't want to see hashtag Phil Hunt trending, you know. This was pre all of the Twitter and BLM stuff, though, so who knows? Nobody might not have even made a hashtag for me. You know, MySpace, it wasn't very very helpful with the police murders. But, yeah, he's like, get on the ground. So, yeah, when the backup came, I was like, all right, let me get on the ground. They got proper uniform, proper badges, and they got guns drawn already. I didn't need them to see me resisting. But, yeah, they went ahead and handcuffed me. What that wound up happening was they charged her with a DUI, which, I mean, she was .1 over. And it's like, yo, I got a friend who, you know, is a white guy. And he's got, you know, I think 2 DUIs, which I think 3 is a felony. And he told me, you know, he would have had, you know, 4 by now if it had not been for officers letting him say, yo, leave your car keys here and walk home, you know, or, hey, call somebody right now. So it was just very crazy to me that they, you know, this one cop went so hard to charge her with a DUI for being .1 over, you know, and I come to help change what I thought was just a flat tire. And I mean, it was a flat tire, but I'm thinking he's there to help her. And obviously he's not, you know, with you this complexion, they rarely ever there to help. But, yeah, so Queen of Slim drew up a lot of memories of that. You know, if you ever had any type of struggles with the cops, then you already know that movie wasn't lying, boy. They will put you in a situation quick. You know, what you thought was a friendly, routine traffic stop all of a sudden becomes a murder investigation. You know, they act like they pulled over El Chapo. But I'm going to let you guys out of here on that note. Thanks for listening. As usual, find me at I Am Phil Hunt on all social media platforms, and Ibrahim at Ibrahim Khalif, and the comic who was on this episode and graced us with the fight stories was Dominic Leonelli. So look him up, and thanks for listening.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.